This week on Art in the Air, we feature the award-winning author of the young adult novel Sharon Biggs Waller. On Saturday, February 26th, we'll have a book signing at noon at Artsy in Valparaiso. Next, an Artsy featured artist, Jackie Kalin, also known as Jack's Art, discussing her art practice. Our spotlight is on South Bend's For the Love of Art Fair, running March 5th and 6th with Shireen Johnson.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's Breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air. She's the producer for the Love of Art Fair in South Bend, Indiana at the South Bend Century Center. And that's going to be happening March 5th and 6th. And you can see information about that. And you can also find out more information online at fortheloveofartfair.com. Please welcome Shireen Klein, the producer of the art fair.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about what people can expect there. You've been doing this, I think, for 8 seasons now, or this is your 8th season. So tell us what people can expect there at the this art fair.
Well, I've been producing art shows for 12 years, and this is our 8th year for the Love of Art Fair, and 5 years in South Bend, Indiana. You can expect to see 42 magnificent artists, from functional art to decorative art. I always encourage people when they say, I'm not into art, and I'll sometimes say to them, well, what do you decorate your home with? It's art. I encourage them that art is not just things that you hang on the wall. It's sculptures. It's wearable art. There's jewelry involved. There's so much involved with art.
More beautiful than just wooden spoons. Picture.
Yes, and wood bowls too.
Yes.
Who are some
For Love of Art Fair, we were first a 1-year show, and at first we were a 1-day show, and I was encouraged to move to a 2-day show. Well, the 2-day show opened up doors for artists coming from Wisconsin, Kentucky, as far as Missouri and Arkansas. In fact, I'm really impressed with the artists that we have at the show. It is not like any other show in the Michiana area. I personally handpick each artist. I travel to different shows, and it gives me an opportunity to meet these artists and invite them to Full of Art Fair. So those artists that are from Arkansas and Kentucky, they typically are not in this area participating in art fairs.
So how do you go about the process of finding these artists?
I drive all over the place. In fact, the truth, this is one of the artists, Kent Epler from Louisville, Kentucky. He posted one Saturday morning that he was going to be at a show in Louisville. I was so impressed with the artwork that I decided to just jump in my car and drive all the way to Louisville, not even thinking about where am I going to stay and if I'm going to even come back. Well, I ended up getting there just in time to network with the artist. And after the show, I thought, oh, I just get a hotel room. I forgot my credit card. So they would not allow me to pay cash at the hotel, and I had to drive all the way back from Louisville, Kentucky. But I ended up gaining 6 artists from that show.
Now, besides artists, you also have some music acts coming into your event. Tell us about some of those. I know one of them we're familiar with. We've had him on the show, Marco Villarreal. He's on Saturday, but tell us about some of the others.
Yeah, and I know Jake. He's fabulous.
Yeah, Jake's been with us for about 3 years now. He's an original songwriter. And then we also have Southside Denny. A lot of people from South Bend will recognize his name. He's originally from South Bend, and he goes by Southside Denny, and he'll play the blues. And he's actually coming in from Canada for the show. So when he saw my post, hey, I'm looking for musicians, he reached out to me right away, and he said he wanted to be involved with For the Love of Art Fair.
And how do you select
on
your musicians?
Sunday,
oh, okay, go ahead.
Oh, sorry about that. On Sunday, we have Mike DeHaze with Informal. He takes the electric cello and just creates this beautiful music. I mean, like, have you ever heard the Beatles played on a cello? Larry, have you ever experienced that?
Yes, I think
that?
I have. I've heard classical interpretations of Beatles, and it's wonderful.
Sometimes. Yeah, so that's what he does. He'll take tunes that we recognize that are rock and roll, typically, and he'll play it on the cello instrumentally.
So are there still room for artists to join in? Because I know I read that it's the application process stays open until you are at capacity.
We still have 3 openings, depending on if I check my mailbox tomorrow. So we still have 3. We did cut the show down from 60 artists to 42, so we could separate the booths and give more people an opportunity to social distance themselves.
And you might, if by the time they hear this episode, it might be closed because this will be airing on February 16th and 18th. So you may already be closed by then for your thing. What you have plans for expanding it from just one weekend to maybe another weekend?
I'm real comfortable with the South Bend Century Center. I'm comfortable with the room that's offered. It's very elegant. And it just adds an ambiance with the chandeliers and the carpet. I can't imagine going larger into a room that feels cold and empty. That's what the other room feels like because it doesn't have carpet and chandeliers. This show is definitely high. I'll say this again. This show definitely. The caliber of art is here, and we want to provide our patrons that come through the door an opportunity. It's an experience to not forget.
Well, that's the For the Love of Art Fair, March 5th and 6th, 10 to 5 on Saturday, 11 to 4 on Sunday. That's Shereen Klein, who's the producer of the For the Love of Art Fair. Thank you for being on Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you, Shereen.
Thank you for having me, Larry and Esther. I look forward to seeing you soon.
Same.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
We'd like to welcome to Art in the Air. She's a writer, author, critically acclaimed with her young adult novels, Mad Wicked Folly, Girls on the Verge, many, many more, but also has a very interesting backstory of her own life, working as a national park ranger at various locations, a fiber artist, works in many, many aspects, and will be on Saturday, February 26th at noontime at Artsy in Valparaiso, where she'll be doing a book signing and interfacing with it on the Mad Wicked Folly. Please welcome to Art in the Air, Sharon Biggs Waller.
Aloha, welcome.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Well, Sharon, our audience always likes to know a little bit about our guests and kind of your background and, like I like to say, how you got from where you were, where you grew up, where you went to school, those influences, to where you are now. So tell us about yourself.
Sure. Well, I grew up in Portage. I graduated in 1984, and I volunteered at the National Park here, Indiana Dunes National Park, since I was 14, something like that.
So were you a junior ranger?
Well, I was a, I worked for the Youth Conservation Corps, and I was able to do that for 2 years. I worked at Chilburg Farm and Bailey Homestead, and I did programs and all that kind of thing. I worked with Jude Rakowski, who ran the farm for a really long time. He's a wonderful mentor of mine. So I did that, and I'd always wanted to be a park ranger. So I was going to school at Purdue, just in Westville, and they asked me at the park to go ahead and apply that they wanted to hire me as a park ranger. So I became a seasonal ranger at Indiana Dunes. And then I was still going to school, and I, because I was a seasonal, I applied at several other parks, and I didn't realize that I would get calls. So I got calls to work at the Grand Canyon, Smoky National Park, Virgin Islands, and I think Lincoln's birthplace or something like that, because I had thrown that in there. So I chose the Grand Canyon. So I had to leave my horse behind, and that was kind of upsetting for me because I was I was really into riding, and I rode dressage, and I did some eventing. And so I thought, well, that's going to be a good experience. So I moved to the Grand Canyon, and I found a guy in Flagstaff that raised Lipizzans. So we drive down there on the weekend or when I was off and ride his horses. And so when that job was over, I came back to Indiana Dunes and I worked here. And then I moved to California. I met somebody. I was like, oh, I'll go out to California. And I was 20, I think, when I moved out there. And I worked at Cabrillo National Monument out there. And the whole time I was writing youth programs, children's programs, puppet shows. I did one puppet show, and then after that, they were like, hey, she's the writer. Let's have her do this. Let's have her do that. And so I got roped into this, and it was just a thing that I was honing my skill. Went to the Grand Canyon. It was, we hear you're the writer. So when I moved to San Diego, I lived in California for 14 years. I lived there, and I was working at Cabrillo National Monument, and I was seasonal there as well. So I would ride. I brought my horse up, and I was at a barn. And the instructor there said, "Oh, I hear you've done some teaching. Do you want to take over my school?" And so I was only working seasonal, and I needed a better job. And I said, "Better job." So I said, "Sure." So I took the riding school, and so I trained horses and kids for a long time, and I went to a few things. And I have a connective tissue disorder called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and I was diagnosed with that about 10 years ago, but I'd had a lot of problems. And so I had to have my shoulder repaired, and I was 25, I think. And my orthopedic surgeon said, hey, you know what? Your joints really fall out of place really easily. And I think you should think about getting another job, another career, because and he worked with baseball players. So he kind of knew what he was talking about. And he said, you know, just think about something that you could fall back on. And, you know, I kind of looked around at the older trainers and I thought, you know what? I think they're right. These guys are really beaten down, and I really don't want horses to be like that for me. So I started sending out query letters, and a query letter is a formulated pitch letter that you send to various magazines. So I sent them to a bunch of horse magazines in 89, I believe. I can't remember dates and years at all anymore. And so I got a hit with a magazine called Horse Illustrated, and they were in Irvine, California. And they asked me if I would be willing to write for them as a freelance writer. And they had other magazines in the publishing house. And then they came up with, so I said, yes, I would do that. And then I applied for many other magazines. And after a while, I was earning a living doing it. So, and then I just started riding horses. And I got a divorce, and this was a sort of a sad time in my life, and everybody has those. And so I had to sell my horse. I had to sell a lot of things. And it was a big turning point for me. I'd written a book on dressage and a book on like just English horsemanship. And I met a friend. I had several friends. I'd gone to England just before this happened. And I met this girl who turned out to be my best friend. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I should go somewhere else. And so my editor said, hey, you know, go to England and do a story about the horses in England. So, okay. So I flew to England and I interviewed the guy who ran the Queen's, oh God, the Royal Mews. And I interviewed a pony club that was right in London. And when I was at the Royal Mews, the Crown Equerry said to me, hey, have you interviewed anybody at the Mounted Branch? Because they have the most horses. They have 200 horses in England. And I was like, oh man, I got to interview someone else. I wanted to go to Westminster Cathedral, and I only had a couple of days left. So I went to Westminster Cathedral and I called at 2:30, and this guy answered the phone. And I said, hey, can we come by? I know it's short time, but I have a photographer. Can we come by and interview? And he said, well, the horses are eating. And I thought, what are you? The horses are eating. I'm not interviewing the horses. I'm interviewing you. And so I said, well, it won't take very long. He said, okay, we'll come at such and such time. So I hung up the phone. I was thinking, God, this guy is a real jerk. He's really a jerk. And I thought, well, maybe I should just blow him off and just go do what I want. We want to go to the pub or whatever. So no, I got to be professional. So I went there. And he was sort of sneering at me. And so I took out my tape recorder. My photographer took some pictures. And he just changed. He was just like delightful and wonderful. And later he told me, he was in a show on Animal Planet. And he told me that his friends had been making fun of him about the show for a really long time. And so he thought I was a joke, like a, what do you call it? We play a trick on somebody. Yeah. And he just felt really bad. And we've been married for almost 20 years now.
Oh. That's a great story.
Wow. Yeah. So I decided, what a meet cute, right? So I moved to England and we got married after a couple of years. And so we lived there for 6 years. And then my husband said, you know, let's go. He was retiring. Let's go back to America and get a little farm. Because we both loved horses, obviously. He was a Mounted Branch officer. I think I said that. So we found this little property right by the national park. And I had right across from this property was the ranger dorm for females. And so it was just across our property. So there was a lot of history for me right in this area, right on this street. And it was really funny. So I did that. But I had, in the meantime, getting back to the novel writing, I started writing novels that were not very good. You know, it's sort of like playing the violin or playing the piano. It takes time to learn it, you know, and it's different than nonfiction. Nonfiction for me was very simple because I had been honing my skills with the national park and I kind of knew how to put together and I studied and whatnot. So I did some books, I sent it out, and it was like, I think I'm doing this wrong. So I just kept writing novels and hiding them under the bed. And I decided I wanted to write one about a girl. I was walking by, let me back up just a wee bit. So I was walking by this statue at, oh goodness, by Westminster Abbey that was a picture of, it was a statue of Emmeline Pankhurst. And I kept thinking, gosh, what would it have been like? Emily Pankhurst was the head of the suffrage movement, the women's votes for women's rights in the early 1900s. She was a big deal person. She was a real, like really, it's my way or the highway, but she did a lot for women there. And there was forced feeding about this time because women would intentionally get themselves arrested by chaining themselves to fences by standing on the street and making a spectacle, handing out leaflets, posting posters on the walls. all kinds of things like that. So they would get arrested and then they would go on hunger strikes. And people were like, they're crazy, they're crazy. And it was like, no, if we die, there's a corpse on your doorstep because you didn't listen to us, sort of a thing. So I thought, gosh, what if a teenager was involved in this? And so from then on, my character, Vicky Darling, was born. And that was A Mad Wicked Folly. And so I finally found an agent. He sold the book in a month. So this is like after 12 years of writing novels that were not very good. And that came out and it got tons and tons of really good starred reviews and won a bunch of awards and things. So that was published through Viking, which is Penguin. It's now Penguin Random House. They merged together. And then 2 years later, I wrote The Forbidden Orchid. And I had gone to, I love plants. So I'd gone to an exhibit, and I believe it was at the Gardening Museum in Lambeth. And there was a exhibition on plant hunters and the dangerous work. And, you know, every kind of plant that we have, orchids, you know, succulents, those weird plants that you have, that was brought over by a plant hunter. And in the Victorian era, it was very popular that these guys would be hired to bring plants for their giant greenhouses. They were called hothouses. They would be called a stove. And so wealthy people, there was like a run on orchids that they wanted these orchids from these areas that had never been explored before. And so they would be kidnapped. They would be fall down an area, you know, and not be able to be, you know, found. Like Douglas, he found the Douglas firs. He walked from one end of America to the other in the Victorian era collecting plants. And he was in Hawaii, which was called the Sandwich Islands then, and he fell into a boar pit and it killed him. So the only thing that killed him was falling. So next time you see a Douglas fir, think about poor Douglas. His little dog was on the edge of the boar pit, you know, and poor guy just got it. So anyways, dangerous. And so I thought, gosh, what would that be like for a girl to be involved in that? And then Elodie was born. And Elodie ends up, her dad is a plant hunter, and he was taken captive, and he was supposed to bring this orchid back. And if he didn't bring this orchid back, it would ruin the family. And so Vicky convinces her dad to go back to China, and she's so worried about him, she smuggles herself onto the boat, and she's helped with this very handsome Russian sailor boy. So there's a little romance there. And so she ends up, you know, having many, many adventures. And so that book also did quite well. And I got some lovely reviews for that. And then I have a third contemporary. It's called Girls on the Verge. And that one is about women's right to choose, reproductive rights. And it is about girls and their different thoughts on reproductive rights and how each one is very different. They come at it from different sides, and it shows sort of the feelings that girls have about it as they're starting, you know, they're becoming teenagers, they're becoming women. And the book says it all, Girls on the Verge. And that one did pretty well. And next year it's coming out in paperback. So that's my life story.
I'm going to take you back just a little bit in that story. I want to know about the novels under the bed, Sharon. Were they historical fiction, or were they just multiple different subjects and things that you were interested in?
Yeah, they were both. The first one I tried was a horse book, and I thought I'd make a series, and I thought it would be really cool because you could learn as you were reading the book about horses. And it was, there was no plot to it. It was just this rambling. There was some, an editor told me there was a lot of talent there, but it was like a team of horses all going off in different directions. So I kind of learned a little bit, and I went to a lot of stuff like conferences, and I read a lot of books on riding and whatnot. So that book didn't sell. And so I learned then to get a tough skin. So it's not about you, it's about the book, because publishing is a business. and they know what they can sell and they know what they can't sell, and they really take a risk on writers. And there's a lot to it. If you put out a book there that doesn't sell, you might never sell another book. So knowing that, I was like, okay, that was a learning. So I wrote another book after I redid that book about 3 or 4 times. And I was like, okay, it's like chewing the same piece of gum over and over again. And I wrote another book about a sort of a magical wardrobe where girls would hide their stories. It was an antique wardrobe. Girls would hide their stories in this wardrobe, and there was a secret drawer, and there were all different ones. And it was too much. It was too complicated. And so I took one of the characters out of there who became Vicky Darling of American Folly. So that was great. So that's one that I hid under there. I think just short stories and other garbage like that, but it's totally fine.
Mm-hmm. Well, then sort of riffing on that, you know, in life, we have so many experiences, meet so many people, and it just kind of all goes into our computer head. And so when you're, so when you've developed your characters and you can go back and read them yourselves, do you identify like, oh, that's Auntie, and oh, that's like my mom? I mean, are there like, I'm asking about the merging of real life and the books.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people do that. I do not do that because I prefer to make up the character and they should be their own person. And, you know, it just makes me feel a little creepy that I don't want to be that person that you don't want to hang around with because they're kind of like going to write about you later on.
Listening.
Yeah. I don't feel that that's fair to my friends or my family or anything like that. And I love writing and making a character out of whole cloth, like a person, like someone I would want to meet, you know, and hang around with. So to me, and this is just me, okay, I don't want to like offend any other writers out there, but I kind of consider it lazy writing. So if you have to borrow from somebody, you know, their personality, I feel like you're being lazy. We kind of learn as writers, and I do this, is that I interview my character and I sit down and I say, tell me about yourself. You know, who are you? What are your likes, your dislikes? What scares you? And I have to know her full on. Like if I don't, then I don't know how she's going to react to certain things. Saying that, I also do the same thing with all of my characters, even if they're minor characters that are only in the scene for like 2 seconds. I bring them to life too. I want to have the fact that if you see a character, you would be happy to follow them. You know, you want to know more about them. And
each and you have a sense of knowing them too.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about like if you go, you have jury duty, right? And you go into jury duty and there's all these people that are kind of taking you, the judge, the lawyer, the what do you call it? The guy that did the crime is sitting there, alleged crime. They all have these cool personalities. They dress a different way. They're not flat cookie cutter characters, you know, and that happens in everyday life that you get a read off of them. You're never going to see them again, but maybe if you talk to them, you'd find them fascinating or something. But, you know, that's
sort of the richness of life. Yes.
Sharon, would you ever think of adapting that to like a play? I mean, sounds like that kind of character development would be wonderful. In out of a novel and into a play or screenplay.
I have thought about screenplays. Now it can be. We do have a film guy agent in my agency, but he hasn't sold any of my books yet. But there's a way. I was talking to another writer that I know quite well, and he's doing that very thing in L.A. And he's offered to like help shepherd it along. And so it's something that I would want to learn, but my time is kind of precious. And so there's only so many things that I can do at once. I have some other things in the pike that I'm taking care of. And then I also walk dogs on the side to have some money and a little bit of get out the house reason, which I love. So, yes, I have thought of it many times, and I think it's something that, you know, maybe the next year or two that I would love to do. But, yeah, I love the idea of that.
Would you feel comfortable with someone else making your adaptation to a screenplay? Because it's a different kind of writing.
Sure. Yes, it is. And not the same things are going to happen on the page that are in the book. You know, there's different things you have to do. And a lot of people will get upset, like their book isn't adapted like full on. And I get that. I understand. But there's different scenes. Like, I think it's fun. Like Outlanders, I've read every single book. Diana Gabaldon is one of my favorite writers. But the actual series is kind of different. The characters are the same, and they have some things that they've added. And I think I love it because now I see my precious characters doing other things. I think that's pretty cool. I like the thought of that. Yeah.
So you're going to be at Artsy. You're going to have your book there. The I think the Mad Wicked Folly is one of them, and that's going to be running through most of February. And you're going to have an event where people can come in and meet you on I believe it's the 26th. So tell us a little bit about what to expect in our last about minute and a half we have here.
Oh yeah. What's going to happen is we're going to do book signings. I will be there. I'll be signing my first two books, Mad Wicked Folly and The Forbidden Orchid. And you can ask me any question about anything, writing, horses, anything like that. And part of the proceeds of the book is going to go to a charity called The Caring Place. And so I'm really excited about that. It's a very good charity. And I should know more about the charity. I believe it's for women who are leaving bad situations, and it helps them, which is a big thing for my own heart. So that's going to happen. And I'm also a fiber artist. I'm a knitter and embroidery. So you've had any question about that, I want to you could ask me. If you have a goat and you need to know something health-wise about it, I can help you with that.
And you also look at manuscripts, right? You'll also
I do. I'm a coach for writing, and I look at manuscripts, and it doesn't matter how bad you think it is, there's always a nugget of something in there. And remember, that same thing happened with me too. So I love to talk to people. Just come in and talk and have a little look at the shop, and it's going to be kind of a fun time.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art on the Air. That's Sharon Biggs Waller, author. And you can meet her at Artsy, now in Valparaiso. We've had them on the show. And it's Saturday, February 26th. It'll be at noontime. And you can find out everything you want to know that you haven't heard in this interview.
Oh, and you can find me at SharonBiggsWaller.com.
Sharon, thank you so much for being on Art on the Air.
You're welcome.
Oh, thank you. It was fun.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air. She's a unique artist from an endless stream of hobbies ranging from table making to studying history of science. Actually, in poker tournaments, she's pursued art at Ball State University, but then she transferred and got a really useful degree in philosophy from Loyola. She has custom paintings and interior wall finishes. Most of her work locally is seen at Artsy in Valparaiso. So please welcome to Art in the Air, Jackie Kalin.
Welcome.
Hi, nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
And her art business is known as Jack's Art. Well, Jackie, tell us a little bit about yourself. I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us about where growing up and everything like that.
I am the youngest of a large family. My mother and father had 10 kids, and we grew up in a big, crazy household. I really didn't. I never thought of art as something separate. It was just part of our everyday life because my dad was always building and refinishing things. And there was always some bare drywall that they kind of left up for a long time because he had a full-time job. So, you know, he'd work on the weekends. And my parents let us draw and paint all over those bare walls. And, it was kind of like that always growing up. There was always some project going on. And so
go ahead. No. Did you do the same for your children? Did they have a blank wall growing up that they could play with?
You know what? I always let them express themselves through art. I wasn't a builder like my dad. I did do some things like that, but they always had ample opportunity. And they actually – my parents still had some blank walls in their house when they were little, and they got to draw on Grandma and Grandpa's walls in the basement and everything. It was almost like a history.
Continuity.
Yeah. There was stuff from when I was little, and they didn't finish their basement for forever. So
did you have a good art program in elementary and high school?
Oh, gosh. Elementary school, I was into it. High school, I don't even think I took an art class, to tell you the truth. I loved art always. I was always a go-to person when there was a poster or, any kind of thing to be made that had some kind of creative twist to it. But I didn't take any art classes. I loved art. I considered myself an artist even back then, but I didn't take the art classes, and I don't know why. So anyway, when I was in, I ended up going to school at Ball State for a while, for about 3 years, and I did study art, and I loved it, and I met, a really good friend there, and ended up going into business with her and two sisters later. But I was a person who changed my degree track 5 times, so I was accepted into the School of Architecture, and I thought, oh my gosh, that's going to take me 5 years. No, I'll do interior design. So that's when I started taking art classes, and I loved that. But then I thought, oh, I'm getting behind. I better switch. Maybe I should do art education, because, I was doing it by math. Who's got, how many classes do I have? How can I finish quickly? And then I ended up just turning into general studies. And then I transferred schools and got the degree in philosophy from Loyola of Chicago. And haven't done a lot with the philosophy degree, except try to live my life very fully.
Yeah. The classes, were they interesting? Did you find them engaging?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I did. I love the philosophy of science, history, psychology, philosophy in all the different writings. And it was all fascinating to me. And I was able to complete my degree in 4.5 years. So it wasn't very far off of that 5-year thing that led me away from architecture. So. but my life changed drastically because I got married right after I graduated, and almost on my first anniversary, we had our first child. So things change, your plans change. You're not going to, do all the things that you thought you were going to do, because you're going to shift gears and you're going to raise your family. And so we had 3 kids in the first 5 years of our marriage. And I focused on raising the kids. But through that, I continually did art because I was making their rooms completely mural filled, and I had an art gallery for my kids when they were like 2 and 1, for their own art. And just it was just always part of my life. But when the kids got a little older, I got together with my two sisters and my girlfriend that I met in college, and we had a business called the Artist Group, and we did custom paintings and murals, a lot of the schools, restaurants in Northwest Indiana, and even some farther away projects.
Are you still collaborating with Jessica and your sisters, or?
Well, we got to a point about, I don't know, it's probably about 8 or 9 years ago, where we felt like we were too old to be schlepping scaffold around and, being perched 20 feet in the air. And we all just kind of decided, let's just do one more, big project and then end it. And we did go back over the last years when, some of our favorite customers hit us up once in a while, like, hey, can you do this? And we did go back. But I after that slowed down, I think it was 2015, I decided that I would paint more. It was like the first time in my life I ever decided to have a New Year's resolution and stick to it. So I just started painting, and I tried to paint every week and then every day. And I did. I created a lot of art. But it was, I think my problem is you're pigeonholed when you're an artist and you're an artist for hire. You do everything everybody else wants to do.
Right.
So I thought, I'll do what I want to do. But I'm too practical. I, I feel like art sometimes is a luxury, and a luxury to be an artist. Not, you know, had no benefactor or grant or anything in my life, so it would take out of time that, you know, we would be using to try to make money, and it felt selfish to sit and paint for hours. So I decided to try to make it work financially for me. So I was making a lot of art that went with mid-century interiors. I had an antique booth at Yesterday's Treasures for about 4 years. And because they shifted it from art, they made it open to artisan work too, not just antiques. So I was able to have all my mid-century antiques that I'm so into. And then I would paint paintings that went with that. And so I was kind of, that was fun. I sold a lot of work that way. And I was delivering pieces to Chicago all the time. It seemed like a good fit. And I was approached by Bridget Nadolsky from ArtZ. She was planning on opening a gallery, and she said, I want you in it. If you'll be in it, that would make me feel better about opening the gallery. And I said, absolutely. So I decided I'm old enough just to paint what I want to paint, right, at this age.
So like on social media, your husband, you have a very supportive cheerleader in your husband for your art. Is he involved in the arts, and has he always been that sort of cheerleader for you?
He's always been very supportive of me. I'm probably kind of hard to live with sometimes with all of my projects going on, because I have a lot of interests and I've always had a lot of hobbies. He is a great cheerleader for me. He's been fantastic with my artwork. He runs my social media for me. I'm terrible at it. And, you know, every once in a while, he's like, we're from the different generation. We have to like really think about it and plan and post something. And you know, it's very thoughtful. It's not natural for us. So he's fantastic. He's not involved in the arts except as a big supporter. And we've always loved art. We actually, the very first time we talked before we started dating, he called me and we were talking about art and art history and the Art Institute.
So, well, so here's sort of a ponder, I guess. What was the first piece of art that you bought together as a couple? Do you have the same taste in art, or do you consult with each other?
We're part of that group of people that, you know, and maybe, you know, that we love art galleries. We love artisan galleries. We love antiques. You know, there's a huge crew of us out there, right? And we all support each other. But we really do have similar tastes. We have we tend to like the same thing. We have like a 7-foot vintage fiber art over our couch, and I bought a giant, you know, we bought a giant carved mahi-mahi for our wall because it's made from one piece of wood and it's beautiful. It's not signed. We don't know where it's from. You know, we love vintage things, but we're not wealthy. So we don't, you know, put down a ton of money on our artwork, but we tend to like the same thing. And we have bought a lot of art over the years, and cycled through it. We've been married over 30, we just celebrated 30 years. So
congratulations.
Describe your art.
I'm primarily a painter. I was a muralist for a long time, so I really like to paint large paintings. So this has been a shift for me because, you know, these are paintings that, you know, range from maybe 24 by 24 up and up, and some smaller pieces too. But I start with a painting either on wood or on canvas, and then if it's on wood, I cut the painting out, or I have my husband cut it out. And if it's on canvas, either way, it begins as a full painting. And when I get to the point where I feel like it's finished, to the point where I can continue with the next step, I start adding whatever I want to it. Usually involves some kind of gold leaf, copper leaf, silver, any kind of metal, and a lot of glass. I love glass. I sometimes, you know, go to Goodwill or Home Goods and find a cool piece of glass and smash it. And I'm out. I cut myself every day that I work, usually with a glass. I go to Kokomo Opalescent Glass and buy pieces there. And I add glass and metal, I add crystals, anything that I like, and I encase it in resin.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
Jackie, I want to go back a little bit. You actually did a mural that won a Better Homes and Gardens magazine award. Tell us a little bit about that back in that history when you were still doing murals.
Oh, okay. That was me. You know, I used to get that magazine mailed to my house, and I would see this home improvement contest. And I thought I was always doing home improvement things at my house. When my husband would go out of town, he's a biker. He would take road trips with his friends. And I always had some big project in mind. That year, I decided to do it in mind and keep track of it with photographs so that I could enter it in this contest and maybe try to recoup some of the money that I blew on redoing a bathroom. So he went on a trip with a friend from Japan, and I knew he was going to be gone about 10 days. So the minute he went away, I had it all set up in my mind, and I just started tearing out the entire powder room at this house that we had. And, I laid the floor, put in a new toilet, a new sink. I mean, I did all this stuff myself. I was racing through it because what I really wanted to get to was the walls, and that just where the mural was. So I had crushed glass and grouted, you know, thousands of pieces of glass and just
created
a mural.
Yeah, I think mural is like, it's more mosaic so that they can understand it,
it is more mosaic,
a painted mural, yes.
Yeah, not a bit of paint really went into it. It was just made with the glass. And but it was, you know, it was fun because I was on a job with my sisters and my girlfriend, Jess, and I got the phone call that I had won one of the categories in the contest. So it was really fun. It was a memorable day, and they came and did a big photo shoot. And so I've been working with glass. That was 2008 or 2009, and so I've been working with glass for a long time and resin, and I didn't combine it all with my paintings for the walls until probably about 5 years ago. And it's been a learning process.
tell us about some of the subjects that you do paint for audience who can't see your work. And then you can also refer them to your social media.
Sure. I think when people think of me, most people are thinking some sort of animal. I do a lot of gulf life, turtles, birds, flamingos. But I really like to do a wide range of subjects. I don't like to be stuck in one, you know, place. I do like to paint what sells, you know, because I'm kind of a market driven artist here. Like I said, I feel like it's kind of a luxury. So I'm trying not to go off on my own tangents too much. I like experiments. I kind of stay with what works. And but I love to paint portraits. I love people. I've been, you know, kind of commissioned the last 25 years to do portraits every once in a while. But my portraits have a real fun, funky twist to them. I like to, you know, everybody gets glass, everybody gets, you know, resin, everybody gets some kind of bling. I love to do people. And I do landscapes and trees too, because I just love nature. I love to be out in nature. And I think that's all I can think of right now.
So you had some very interesting commissioned work in your, and I don't know whether this was pre-children or during that whole mothering stage, but the professional boxers that you outfitted, can you, what was, that was like so cool.
Okay. My first three were young. The fourth one came along 8 years after number three. So my first three children call themselves the first litter. when they were very young, I lived down the street from my two sisters, and they had, we were always sewing, doing murals, making things. It was all word of mouth, but my sisters were really, really talented seamstresses. They could do weddings, and somehow through some friends of ours, a professional boxer asked if we would be willing to do his clothing and cornerman's jackets for, you know, his guys, as the trunks and all that. So we made some pretty outlandish pieces, you know, silver lame and, you know, clear plastic and, you know, really, really embellished things. So that was back when our kids were little. We had seven little kids running around, you know, and between the three of us and the seven kids and the chaos, we turned out a lot of projects, and not really thanks to me. I was part of it, but I was not the brains behind the outfit. It was my sisters. But that was kind of before the kids got old enough where we could get into the business as a business, as the artist group, which we had, I think it was a little over 15 years. And, uh-huh. But honestly, my art endeavors, I can do a lot more in the recent years. My youngest is on the autism spectrum, and he's in high school now. And he's just now gotten a little bit easier to take care of. And I will never be able to let my guard down, and he will always be with us. But, you know, I'm able to do a lot more. I've gotten into trying out to do art shows, art fairs.
Yeah.
And he comes with, and he can help. And we can also, you know, my husband and I can kind of tag team with him, you know, setting up and getting ready for that. And so we're kind of experimenting with that, and it's been really, really successful. So, and we did the first one right before lockdown. So I'm probably on like maybe my sixth attempt at an art show, and I'm going to be doing that in about a week and a half. So anyway, I realized that my art, it was kind of like a perfect storm of opportunity with my friend Bridget opening the Artsy and having me paint, and people come in and they buy a lot of artwork from all of the artisans, but from me, and that gives me a reason to paint more. And then I've been able to do more also because of my son. So
very good. Hey, I want to ask you already kind of touched on it, though, how COVID impacted you. We've talked to some artists who it's been like actually a positive experience because they're shelter in place and they really got creative, and some of them didn't. So tell us how it impacted you.
It was kind of nice to be forced to stay at home, because I love to create. I'm very prolific, and I like to have an excuse to stay home and do the work. But it hasn't really impacted me negatively, except that I did have it, and I have some lingering effects of it. But the Artsy gallery is just been a boon for me, and we've remained open, and we've just moved to Valparaiso, and so where a lot of businesses closed up, they've powered on and expanded.
What are you looking for? And we're getting down to like our last minute or so. But what projects are you looking forward to that you haven't done yet?
Oh gosh, I have so many projects that I would like to do. I'd like to do large scale projects, but for the time being, I just have so many ideas in my head of my mixed media pieces. I've just started creating ones with fur on top of all the glass and the resin. I'm probably going to be attempting to do Art Prize again, which is in Grand Rapids in the fall. And that is a huge endeavor. So as long as I have the time, I'm going to try to attempt that.
Well, we got about a minute left. So give us how we can find out you on social media, how to contact you. Obviously, Artsy, who's now in Valparaiso there, just like a kind of kitty corner from Round the Clock. But tell us how we can look at your work, websites, and things like that.
My website is jaxkalin.com, J-A-X-K-A-L-I-N. From there, you can contact me through the contact field. On Facebook, I am Jax Art. Just one word. And locally, I have a lot of pieces on display, like a running art show at Artsy at 6 Morgan Boulevard in Valparaiso, like you said, right by Round the Clock.
Very good. Well, we'd like to thank you for being on Art in the Air. That's Jackie Kalin, otherwise known as Jax and Jax Art. You can find her at jaxkalin.com. And then also on Facebook at Jackie Kalin. And you can even do a Google search and find her. Thank you for sharing your art journey with us. Jackie, thank you so much for being on Art on the Air.
Yeah, thank you. That was sweet.
Thank you. You have a wonderful day. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Art on the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP Station Manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Our theme music is by Billy Foster, with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. Underwriters for Art in the Air, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary LeVan, Arts Patron. Art in the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there. So don't just be an Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show